the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with another episode of Non-League Insight and Knowledge. What half of that combination my co-presenter provides, I will let you decide. But I'm very pleased to be joined in the studio by stalwart of the non-league management team and stalwart of the non-league football show, Mr. Dave Anderson. Good morning, Dave.
Yeah, good morning. This is, by the way, people who are listening, so probably a grumpier Dave Anderson because I'm not brilliant in the mornings. Well,
some of us have been up for almost a whole day already, Dave. I say morning because... Yeah. It is an early start for both of the day, and it made me recall a conversation I had with somebody the other week about days of old when Christmas fixtures would be more, maybe the 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock kickoff, and they seem to have disappeared out the window nowadays.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the rhyme or reasons maybe that the clubs get the choice of what time kickoff is, and if you're travelling away from home, then the early kickoff's not for you because you have to leave a lot earlier. But always remember that the Boxing Day fixture is a massive fixture, isn't it? And to be fair, as a manager, you never worried about your team Boxing Day because generally they all wanted out of the house after Christmas Day. New Year's Day was a... not so much today because players don't sort of participate in alcohol as much. But going back to the day, like I remember AFC Wimbledon actually bringing in a breathalyzer kit that my father-in-law had. He'd retired from the Met, and he just had this. And I said, if we don't win, I'm going to breathalyze two of you. And I always remember, I think Chipstead might have beat us, or someone beat us on New Year's Day, and I did the draw. One of them was Martin Randall, and the other one was Steve Butler. And I'm thinking, listen, I know for a fact these two have had a drink the night before. And the breathalyzer kit, they both came up normal, you know, but obviously it had gone out of date. And you could see the shock on their face that they were negative, you know. But the things we tried to do. But I always felt that as a manager, you always want to kick off at three. And any time the kickoff was moved, you were never as comfortable. Although it was a big traditional thing.
Yeah, it puts your routine out, doesn't it?
Yeah. That's the word you see, routine. Everybody wants to get in a routine of dressing room and how it goes.
Yeah, as you say, in days of yore, there were certain players whose routine were just to come in from the night before and roll into the dressing room.
Straight to the ground, yeah.
But obviously, last week you were with Dean Brennan at Wilson and Caroline, and it was a great show, but Wilson continuing to fly in the National South. You've been there last week for the show, but also to watch some games. Was there a certain sense, sort of an air that you get at clubs that are clearly on the up?
Well, the feeling I got on the Saturday was there, and I'm not trying to be clever here, it was pretty obvious, that everyone's together there. You know, the Dean and Stu have come in and created a real atmosphere of togetherness. And I got that feeling in the boardroom. I got the feeling sitting and watching the game on my own. Well, I watched it with Hard towards the end, Hard Chris. But just the feeling was they were... And I walked around and sort of waited on them coming off the pitch, and obviously they'd won and they were plotted off. But you just got that feeling of everyone's sort of moving in the right direction, and it's easy to go, well, of course you need that. Yeah, of course you do, but getting it's a whole different ballgame. And I'm not sure, I hope and I pray they sustain it. They're experienced enough to sustain it as management team. And it's an unbelievable start for them. But they've now become the hunted, and that becomes a different ballgame. But they're a big club, and you would hope that they can sustain it. I want to see how they go in the next sort of half a dozen games, because we're six or seven games in now, and now it's real. You know, the first five or six games, every manager will say, give me the first five or six games, I'll tell you where we're at. Well, we now know where Wilson are at, you know. So interesting to watch, and great for me because it's around the corner.
And so to our first guest, we spoke to him last season when he was on the way to the third title in four seasons. This year, they're first in step three. It's been fairly steady, but in the FA Cup, in the preliminary round, they made headlines again, knocking seven goals past step six side Buckbrook St Michael's. This weekend, in the first qualifying round, they have, on paper, a tough trip to East Thurrock United. I'm pleased to welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, manager at Peterborough Sports, Jimmy Dean.
Hello, Tim. How are you, mate?
I'm good. How's the season for you? I say it's a tough one on paper. It's going to be a tough one in practice as well, because Rookery Hill is never an easy place to go. I mean, some would say it's not an easy place to get to.
It's one of the toughest ties we could have had. I mean, I know we got a good one in Buckbrook, but if you remember last year when we had our FA Cup run, we had Stamford, who was top of the Step 4 league, and then from there, we then had Basildon, who was top of their Step 4, remembering we were Step 4. And then we had Boston United before we got short in the FA Cup. So it's another tough one. It's having to do it the hard way again. And I know we're both meeting, you know, as Step 3 teams, but again, we're coming from Step 6, Step 5, Step 4. We've quite a few of the same players, and they're coming down from Step 2, aren't they? So, you know, it's an away game. It's just a really, really tough fixture. We're well aware of how tough it is. But it's the FA Cup, you know. You just got to crack on with it, lad, don't you?
You do, Jimmy. And I've put down here prep, because effectively you're going there and with nothing to lose. But have you watched them? Have you a game plan? Are you just going to go and be who you are? How are you approaching it from the manager's side?
Right. I mean, normally we can't, you know, I wouldn't say we can't afford, but we choose to spend our money on players because it's pretty tight at our level rather than have a scout report. But yep. I gave the boys the Thursday night off, which gave me a spare 50 quid from the training facility. And the chairman said I can send a scout there. So I got a friend who, you know, he's manager of King's Inn, he's manager of Wisby's, he's a good bloke and he knows the game. He's gone and had a look at them for us. He sent me the details over, but if I'm honest, I've not sat down and had a proper look yet. I will do tonight before training and then we'll take it from there. But, you know, all you can do is prepare a little bit, unless you've got videos of them.
Yeah.
Unless you've got videos of teams and you can see, you know, in depth how they play, you know, like, you can only prepare to a point. You can only prepare your press. You can only prepare for whether they play with width or not, these kind of things. You can't go in too in-depth on it. So I am a big believer, you know, we've got to do what we do anyway. You know, we've got to impose ourselves on them to win the game. But, of course, be aware of any strengths that we think they might have.
Yeah, I think it's a balancing act, and it's balancing about giving your players a little bit of information against...
Of course it is, you know, and it's a hard one, you know. It's a hard one because ultimately you don't know too much about them. Like, you know, we're going into step three this season. I don't know a lot too much about the teams, you know, like, but you try and build alliances and friends and people whose opinion. It's not just people who want to tell you things. There's a lot of people who want to tell you things. It's people you trust, and then you've got to value their opinion. Do you know what I mean?
I do. I know exactly what you mean. I mean, I'll tell you this much. I've played there many times. I've played against John Coventry many times. It's a tight pitch. Yeah, it's a tight pitch. It's a small pitch. Any supporters get there are quite, you know, they'll be in your face. It's quite a good place to go, actually. John's a gentleman. He's been there for, he's probably 120 years old now, Johnny, you know, but...
Is that the manager?
Yes, yeah. And you'll...
So I'm coming up against some experience, mate.
Oh,
I've not looked into it too much. I'll look before training tonight to see if there's anything we can put into practice. But again, you've got an hour, you know. How much can you prepare for a team with an hour?
Yeah, I think you've got it. Like, yeah, your basic shape against, and then what you're going to do to them, I think, is your
thing. Of course, but I value my time, to be honest. I value my time where we're at the minute. Before a game on the board, I think that's my time to try and get it into players' heads. If I think there's any really important things for players to do, like specifics, like player for player, or you know, you're playing someone on a certain role in their team, I think you've got to get into them on the Friday night, have a chat in the rear, and then bring it back to them on the Saturday on the tactics board. In that half hour, you've got, if you get there early enough, to prepare for the game. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's like at our level, non-league, unless you're full-time, there's only so much people can do. it's all right, people saying they've done a tactical masterclass, they've done this, they've done that. But it ain't always like that, Dave, because you're getting an hour a week, mate, yeah. and half hour on a tactics board. And you know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's not played on a tactics board, and you find that out quite quickly some Saturdays. Listen, last one from me is, obviously, financially it's good for the football club to have a run in the FA Cup. You're talking about you save 50 quid to have a scout. When you have runs like these, does your budget get some of the money? What's the deal with the with the prize money?
With our club, we've had two backers. It was Tommy Cooper, now the new chairman, Grant Cooper's come in. Some of it's gone in as a loan, and they don't put it off as a debt to the club. They put it in as like anything we make from FA money that comes back to them that way. So. Yeah. Immediately, you know, it doesn't make a big difference. But then, to the playing budget. But then these guys have then got to fund this budget again this year for us, our playing budget. And they've got to fund the groundworks we need to get done. You know what I mean? So it's not as though any of it stays in the pockets. It's all expenditure that's got to go into the club. You see what I mean?
Yeah, do, Jimmy.
I mean, last year, off the back of the run, but I wouldn't say I've gone in and said, look, we've had a cut run. I mean, they did give the boys £100 a man for beating Boston, which was good of them. But I wouldn't say that off the back of this money, I'll go in if we won the game and say, can I have an extra £100 a week in my budget? It doesn't work like that. But what I will say with me chairman is that any time that I've thought, and I'm not ridiculous when I go in and ask, I understand what we're working to and where we're at. If I want a player, you know, I want an extra 50 quid, 100 quid for a player, and I go in and I say, look, Grant, you know, look, we're struggling here. You can see we're struggling here.
Yeah.
I need to get this position, that position. You know, I've done it 3 or 4 times and he's never said no. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I can't fault what he does and how he does it or Tommy as well, you know. Like, but both of them do everything they can. So this is an opportunity really for them to get a little bit back. But then, as I said earlier, it goes straight back in again. You know what I mean?
You mentioned a little bit earlier and where you're talking about your players. This term, you're in the Southern Central Premier Division. And I know last season you said you put together a squad of very good players that deserve to win. And you've kept faith with them again this term. And how's that working out? Is it good to have a unit, particularly when results aren't necessarily going your way in the league?
That's fantastic, isn't it? You know, like we know ultimately that our dressing room is tight and it's in it together. You win, you lose. You know, like, from my perspective, to improve my team, I can't spend a little bit more. Do you see what I mean? So I got given a little bit more money by the club in the summer. And what we decided to do is to look after the lads we had. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because we had some of them on step 5 and step 6 money still, like what when they joined. So we got 3 or 4 players got pay rise. I mean, one of them nearly got double. Do you know what I mean? And that was just as a reference of how happy we was with him. Because for me to go out and replace these players, it's going to cost a lot more than what we give them anyway. So unless someone says here's another grand, another 1,500 quid a week, you know, it is what it is, and we are where we are. Mm. Like I said last year, I thought I had a team that was going to win the league. This year, I think I've got a team that can compete. I mean, we've gone through, we've won 1, drawn 3 and lost 2, but you know, we've been so unlucky, you know, so far. And I always want to be one of these managers who don't come on and bemoan decisions and bemoan, you know, luck and things like that. And, you know, to date I've done it, you know, but I've found, that's the thing that I've found. I mean, teams like, we played King Banbury the other night, they're top. The possession was 59-41. The pass completion was, ours was 82%, theirs was 59 or 62. And they're a football side. Here's the key stat. When you're going up the levels, our shots was 25, theirs was 10, but 5 of our shots were on target. Out of all them chances we made, 7 of their shots was on target. So 18% of our shots were on target, 70% of their shots were on target. That's quite a bit, isn't it? Yeah. That's quite a big difference. And that's where we've got to get better. We've got to be better in both boxes. You know, but that's something we can be good at. We have been good at, but we've got to get consistency to it to improve, boys.
And you're also one of those clubs that are on the border of the league boundaries. And so you've had to make the switch from the Northern League to the Southern League. So does that have an impact on your ability to retain players? And if you were to try and bring other players in? Because I suppose, you know, say you get promotion, you're likely to be in National North, so moving from the Southern League into National North is going to be a difficult move again.
Yeah, I mean, look, the first thing, yeah, that's a long way off, you know. We're quite literally in there with clubs that are four times our budget at the minute. So that's a long way off. That's not a problem to consider. But going backwards, it was when we moved from the north to the south. And all I can say is it made my job a lot easier. It made it a lot easier for me. I mean, as soon as we moved over, I had two or three players ringing me wanting to join. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas the year before, we had injuries and I couldn't get a player to join. And I found, you know, the club's a bit higher up. The club's in geographical terms, the northern side. Mm. There was more affluent. They got more fans. The Stamfords, the Corbys, the Spaldings. At that point, they had an extra grand. Some of them double our budget a week. And, you know, when your centre-half gets injured, and say, let's say hypothetically, you're paying him 130 quid. Well, we was paying him 130 quid. And they're paying their centre-half 250. You can't go out and get a like for like. You understand what I mean? Whereas in the Southern, it was our rivals, the local, you know, not the Bromgrove and that. It was a lot more competitive with them, you know. We was probably the bigger club. We could go out and say, we want you. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, you've obviously had great success, as you say, coming up from step six now to step three in a very short space of time. So is it a case of consolidating this season on the field, but also allowing the club to catch up off the field as well? Because you must notice the difference going around the clubs with the amenities they've got, sheer bodies on the floor, volunteers and that sort of thing.
Mate, we're miles behind, do you know what I mean? We are like off the pitch. And that ain't to say that we ain't got a team that work, because we've got a small group of people and they do put a lot of time in and make it as good as they can. But, you know, it's getting like... We had no right to get promoted that season. You know, we didn't. That's a fact. We was going against a massive club in Bromsgrove that was probably double our budget. And I don't refer to budgets as too important, because... it's about catchment area as well. Peterborough, you know, we're the top non-league side in Peterborough, and Peterborough's a big city, you know what I mean? So it's all relative, but it can make things harder and it can make things tricky. And, you know, on paper, we had no right to take the promotion or get the promotion, but we took it, and, you know, you've just got to be as ready as you can be and make the best of it you can. Like, for me, this is a fantastic challenge this year. Like, you know, we had a big pre-season and probably took a bit eye off the ball a bit going into this and thought if results was going to keep happening. You soon realise they're not. The manager's a bit sharper. The players are a bit better, you know. But it's quite a considerable step. So we've just got to try and level off, lads. Like you say, consolidate. You know, I probably went into it a bit blind like I did at step four when we first won. We was bottom at Christmas. You know, that ain't going to happen this time. I hope it's not anyway. But we've got to be sensible. You know, like I sat there talking after the Stourbridge game was 2-0 up, 4 minutes left against 10 minutes. I mean, we drew 2-0. I mean, I don't know how. I don't want to go there. That'll, you know, that's not a nice conversation. But I sat there with my chairman, and my chairman turns around and he goes, well, you know, like, I said, no one really. I mean, Tam was battered us, but it was awful that day. He goes, you know, we've competed with every team. You know, maybe we could look up the playoffs. And, you know, I'll tell you what I told him then, you know. Got no hope of thinking like that. You know, there's proper teams, proper managers and proper players in this league, and it's a huge step. So I think we've got to be sensible. We've got to try and make sure we maintain our step three status.
Yeah.
Anything after that is a real, real big bonus. And then like you say, try and build the club into being a proper step three club at some point, 2 or 3 years. I don't know. You know, that's for the chairman to tell me where he wants to go and how quick he wants to do it. Where we can go and compete, you know, to maybe progress to step two, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I guess that's where cup runs like this Saturday could come in handy. Jimmy,
of course they can. Like you say, I mean, the boys, like I say about, you know, the money they're taking and the money has to go back in. They've got to put up a stand, a 100-seater stand, so we can stay at step three.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, and then that's got to have seats added to it in time. And there's so much that goes into the club as you go through the levels. There's so much that has to go off the field as well as on the field, you know. I was talking about this last night. You know, to maintain your status at step three, you probably want about 80 to 100 grand a year. To get out of step three, you're probably talking 200-300 grand a year. You know what I mean? In terms of playing budget, it's a lot of money, isn't it?
It's a lot of money, but there's a lot of money at stake on Saturday as well. Jimmy, it's been fantastic having you back on the Non-League Football Show. We'll keep following your progress.
Yeah.
And best of luck at the weekend.
Take care. Cheers,
lads. So another big week of cup action lower down the pyramid with the start of the first round qualifying of the FA Cup. Who better than to bring in is our very own FA Cup expert at FA Cup Fact File, Mr. Phil Annetts.
Hi guys, how are you all doing?
All right, mate.
We're looking forward to another big FA Cup weekend, Phil. I mean, what can you tell us? I look at the last round, there were 549 goals in the initial 160 ties that last round. That doesn't include many of the replays concluded this week. Was that a record? Because we've just spoken to Jimmy Dean at Peterborough Sports. They hit seven. I think there were another four sides, the City, Basildon United, Thatcham Town, Bridgewater Town. They all hit seven in that round as well. Was it just a goal fest that round?
I think it was a high number, but I don't think it's as high as in the past. I haven't checked to see if it's a record, but I am aware that back in the 20s and 30s, you used to get goal fests every week when they introduced a new offside rule. So if I look back then, I guess there'll be lots more goals then. But it was great to see lots of goals go in.
I'm tempted to say, did they understand the offside rule in them days?
Because
I ain't sure I understand it in these days.
I don't think anyone understands it.
And so we've got 116 ties this time around. What are the ones that we should be looking out for?
Okay, well, it's been a bit of a challenge getting on top of this because, as you know, a lot of the replays only happen this week. So it all kicks off with Sutton Common Rovers versus Beaconsfield Town on Friday night. So that should be a good start to the weekend. There's lots of Step 6 clubs still going, including a couple on their debut FA Cup campaigns. So you've got ASC Vardenians, who go to the Tooting and Mitcham United, who've got a much more longer record in the FA Cup. So that'll be quite a challenge for them. And then you've also got Sutton Athletic, who host Flackwell Heath. So there's a couple of newbies there still going, maybe looking for further glory. You'll know one of the other Step 6 teams, Dave. You've got Arundel there still going. You remember them from last season.
Yeah. I'm so pleased they've had a good run this year because they hammered us last year. And to be fair, Simon, nice guy. I'd want them to do well, you know. So tough game for them.
Yeah, they've got to go to Ramsgate. That would be very difficult. But if they do it, they'll recall their best ever run. So the incentive's there.
And one that I picked out is the M6 Derby. Two fairly big name clubs, Tamworth against Nuneaton Borough.
They've not actually met in the FA Cup in their current guise, but Tamworth and Nuneaton Borough did meet a lot of times with the older Nuneaton Borough club. I think they've just got a slight advantage of 5-3, I think, from memory. So it should be a good battle of old, remembering those days when they used to meet quite often.
And I think last time you had a number of derbies for us. Are there any other standout pub facts that we
love? Let's be honest.
The sort of thing that we can wow our friends as we're regaling tales in the pub over the weekend.
Well, we've got Hastings United are taking on Worthing, which on paper sounds like just a normal tie, but actually it's the most common tie of the round. They've met 11 times in the competition before, but never when Hastings United were called Hastings United. They were either called Hastings and St Leonard's or St Leonard's, and they haven't met for 73 years. Why it's quite complicated as well is that Worthing have played the other Hastings United a couple of times. And they've played Hastings and St Leonard's, and they've played a team called St Leonard's United. So it's quite a complex, history, Dan. And I'm hoping I got it all right because I'm not an expert on that area of West Sussex or East Sussex, whichever it is. It shows you how much an expert I am. I don't know which even Sussex it is. But it's interesting that they haven't played for 73 years yet, the most common tie.
Yeah.
You'll be interested in Hayes and Yedding United, of course.
I will be interested in my away fixture this weekend.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, they've never gone out of the competition this early in the FA Cup. So they're something they've got to hold on to.
Oh, you might regret saying that.
Moving swiftly on to further fact, I spotted that I mentioned earlier that Thatcham Town were one of those that netted seven in the last round. They got seven against Andover New Street, and the former FA Vars winners have been rewarded with coverage from the BBC for their next game, which is a big game at home to Salisbury, which is the BBC feature game, 12:30 PM on Saturday.
It is, yes. So it's good for them that they've managed to secure that game. Should be quite a good game. It's step four versus step three. They haven't played in the cup before. Salisbury have quite an interesting record. They've only played in the FA Cup three times in their current guise, but every time they've gone to the second qualifying round and gone out in that round. So it'll be interesting to see if they can make that four out of four.
I've seen that.
I think Thatcham did play the old Salisbury City a couple of times and lost both times, so they'll have a little bit of incentive to try and address that.
No, I was just going to say, I've seen Thatcham pre-season, actually. They played Churchy, and I was at the game, and they looked a good outfit, to be fair. So
I used to be involved in what's called the North Parks Football League, and there's a player that now plays for Thatcham Town playing, Curtis Angel. I know he won a Vars medal a couple of years ago, so I'm always keeping an eye out for players like that.
We've all got them, Phil.
And what about yourself then, Phil? I know you went to Wembley the last round and came away disappointed, but where are you heading this time?
Yeah, well, this time I'm heading up north for me to watch Romulus take on Buxton. So I put out another Twitter feed to say, where should I go? And I was enticed to go up to Romulus. So I'm looking forward to that.
And we know it's not all about the money and it's all about the glory of the FA Cup, yeah. But we've spoken, as I said, to Jimmy Dean at Peterborough Sports, and you know, he was talking about the issues that they have with budgets and that sort of thing. When you have been around and there's this extra money, even for the losers this year again in these early rounds, have any of the clubs sort of suggested how important that income is to them?
Everywhere I go, it's the two main topics. One is the amount of money that they earn, which is fantastic. The second is just being part of the historic FA Cup competition. So those two things combine, and I talk to all people, all clubs, that they're just excited, you know, to be able to be part of it and to obviously get some money that might keep their future secure for a bit longer.
And I think as well, I mean, the FA increased it. Oh, it was not that long ago, which I thought was a real good thing, and it is proper sort of money now, and it doesn't mean that they can't increase it again if they want to, but I think you're right. As much as the money is essential for the football club, every dressing room, every player since they went to school wants to play in the FA Cup, and it's just one of them days that, especially at this round where it's leading into the sort of the top non-league clubs coming into it, you always want to be in there because there is a chance of big coverage.
Yes, yeah, and getting attention. If you get a national league team in the next round, you may even get on the BBC online coverage as well. So yeah, big opportunity for clubs.
And we touched upon it earlier on in the season. That there were quite a number of clubs that applied to join the FA Cup this year that didn't get in. So The magic of the cup is still there, even if you're not competing in it.
Yeah, it is, and everyone who didn't get in is really annoyed and frustrated by it. I still think there's a big job for the FA to do to get more teams into the competition. As you know, I'm a big advocate of opening it up for more clubs. And I also think that those clubs at the top end of the pyramid should get exposure to the excitement and the thoughts of people around the FA Cup at this level of the game. It might give them a different perspective about how they should approach the competition and how they should develop their own interest in making it, maintaining it as the best competition in the world.
Well, you're obviously doing your own little bit towards that, Phil. How can people find out more about your stats and follow you and find out what's been going on in the FA Cup?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter at FA Cup Fact File. You can also find my WordPress blog under the same FA Cup file name, and I also I'm on Facebook as well under FA Cup. So yeah, do follow and do comment, and do feedback.
Well, thanks as ever for joining us, Phil. Enjoy your FA Cup field weekend.
Speak to you in a fortnight.
Yeah, cheers, guys. Have a good weekend.
Cheers, mate.
Now, one of the things we are proud of in non-league is the countrywide support of the wider non-league family. Our next guest is certainly part of the non-league show family as our North East correspondent, but he's also an ambassador for North East mental health support charity, If You Care, Share. And I'm pleased to welcome Mark Brothers to tell us more about their Inside Out initiative. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thanks for having me again.
Well, it's always good to have you on, but is it particularly good to have you on for this campaign? Tell us more, Mark.
So the Inside Out campaign is running for the fifth consecutive year. It's a very simple campaign to try and initiate conversations surrounding mental health. All we ask is that people wear an item of clothing inside out, take a photo, get it put on social media, use the hashtags Inside Out and Ask Me Why, and get it out there and help spread the message of, you know, you need to get what's on the inside out and start conversations about mental health, because I think there's been some pretty shocking statistics released recently about the fact that the suicide rate is at its highest level for a long time. And this campaign is hopefully playing a part in trying to get those figures down, to make sure people will discuss their mental health, to make sure that people will open up to friends and family and loved ones and whoever else. It's been highly successful last year, and I don't mind saying the non-league family played a massive part in this. We reached over 9.5 million people on social media, which was the biggest reach we've had yet in the 5 years we've been running it. And this year, we want to try and get more. And I know the non-league paper have got behind it, obviously yourselves. And just on Twitter so far, it's been exceptional, the response from the non-league family. So it's something that's close to my heart. It's a family-run charity that's expanded very, very quickly. We don't just work in the Northeast; we do work around the country. So we are trying to hit as many people as possible over the next few days. The actual campaign itself takes place on Tuesday, on the 10th, which runs in line with Worldwide Suicide Prevention Day. But we are, of course, asking non-league clubs to take part on Saturday at their fixtures, which we did last year. We ran it on the Saturday, and it was great. I mean, the response from around the country was just phenomenal. So hopefully we can at very least match that this year.
Yeah, and it is all about the awareness side of things, isn't it? I mean, I've been looking at the If You Care, Share website, and the charity's got three main aims: prevention, intervention, and support for those bereaved by suicide as well. And it is education, information, and support, which I think is important. You know, the more people talk about things, the more people can understand that it just touches everybody's lives.
It does, and for me, it's a very special charity, and I've seen the work that they do firsthand in all three of those departments. They are very, very close in the local community, but they are doing fantastic work around the country as well. The education side of it, I've seen them working in football clubs, I've seen them working in local schools and schools around the country to educate, you know, teenagers from the age of sort of, well, 13 to 18, and then in the academies it's obviously up to 23s, just to try and educate them on mental health, a bit of mental health awareness, and again going back to the message of Inside Out, the importance of talking to people and knowing that you're not alone. It does seem that there is still a bit of a taboo around mental health and in particular suicide, and I think those barriers need to be broken down. And that's kind of one of the aims of Inside Out. It's one of the aims of the charity, is just to start conversations. And Inside Out's a really basic campaign when you think about it. It's a very simple 10-second tweet or Facebook post or Instagram post, but it can help spread the message and have a serious impact. And for me, that's what the charity's done across the board. I see messages that come in on social media, and emails and that sort of thing, and it's just a very, very special charity.
Yeah, and it's just one of those subjects that, you know, I've just wrote down here working class areas, because obviously I grew up in one in Belfast, and
yeah,
there's, I think you're right to talk about the education of being able to share these things, because I only go by my own experiences, but when you grow up in these sort of places, which I'm very proud of, but any sign, weakness is something you can't be seen to have. And, yeah. and any mental sort of struggles you're having is deemed as a weakness and has been for a long time. And in certain areas, especially even in football dressing rooms and around that sort of male-dominated environment at times, it's you're scared to say, look, I'm struggling here. And I think it's massive that we get this out here that, no, listen, we all struggle at times. Some of us deal with it better than others because that's how we're built. But there will be someone there for you, you know, and don't feel that you're the one and only person that's suffering from it. And, you know, people recover and do well. But it's that education part's massive, I think, just in my own experience of growing up in a council estate in North Belfast, you know.
I mean, I think it's a valid point that, you know, I'm from a working class area as well, from the West End of Newcastle, and I think growing up it was that being a man you had to be yes. strong, you know, you don't let things get you, you're just kind of stoic in the face of anything negative. And it's, I think there's still a certain degree of that in the not just football, let's be honest, in any sort of sporting environment or even just in everyday life, that men are still meant to be this strong character. But is true strength not being able to open up and
absolutely
say,
absolutely, you know, and I think that's the education bit in it, that we need to move people's mindsets.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when I look at, and obviously I won't name any clubs or players, but I do know there are cases in non-league football where players have started opening up to managers and people at clubs and saying that they're struggling, and these players are now getting support of the clubs. And that's one of the things I have to say I think has improved even just over the last couple of years, is the fact that I think clubs are getting better at coping with players saying, look, we're struggling, and give them time away from training and giving them time away from matches and a bit of a leave of absence, if you want to call it that, just to get things together. I know If You Care Share has had a great response from the North East non-league clubs, and I know that the likes of Sunderland and Middlesbrough and Newcastle are coming on board. It's one of those where, as men, we need to get rid of that stigma of, oh, you can't talk about it because absolutely. That's you being weak. And I think in modern society, when, let's be honest, life's tough at the moment, things are difficult for the majority of the country, and particularly those in working class areas, and you know, money's hard to come by, and there's political things going on, and life's difficult enough without bottling it up and making things even more difficult for yourself. And that's, going back to the charity, is one of the things that we're trying to stop, is people bottling it up and taking things to the kind of far end, and just being able to speak to anyone. As I say, it doesn't have to be someone, a family or a friend. It can just be someone you know. It can be anyone. It doesn't matter who that message goes out to, as long as you keep talking.
Yeah, and you know, and to massively recognise you're not on your own here, you know.
Yeah.
And big old lumps like me, you know, I think it helps, you know, I fully support this stuff because, you know, I think people try and be something they're not, the big image and that. So always remember there's people there for you, there's people like you, there's people who will support you and understand what you're going through and have been through it themselves. So I think it's you know, the more these sort of foundations that come out, I have no issue with all. I think it's a step in the right direction for all of us.
Absolutely. And I think the fact that we are even having this conversation on the non-league show, and the fact that the, you know, the non-league paper were brilliant in their support of it, as they were last year.
Yeah.
That is showing that progress in sort of wider society is being made. The fact that people are willing to support, not just inside out, not just If You Care Share, but the kind of overall push to try and spread mental health awareness. And, you know, Dave, if you had a player who came to you and said, oh, I've got a hamstring strain, I might be missing Saturday's game, you would say, right, fair enough, you know, we'll get it checked out.
Yeah.
If someone comes to you and says, you know, I'm not feeling great, I'm having a tough time, in the past, and I don't just mean you here, by the way, I mean any manager, I think they would have said, right, come on, just let's get on with it. Whereas now, there would be a conversation had in the vast majority of dressing rooms, and I think that goes from managers of all generations, where it's the more experienced ones or kind of the new ones who have maybe been a bit more accustomed to these conversations taking place. And I think that's a big sign of progress.
And I think as well, you know, you're quite right. If I go back to when I first started in management, when we talk about education there, I'm not trying to talk down to people. I'm talking about my own education of it. And when it first came up, it would be, what do you mean? You know, let's deal with it and get on with it.
Yeah.
Because that's the sort of environment you came out of. And so when I'm talking about education, I'm talking about all of us, you know, not people who are suffering with the issues. I'm talking about people who don't suffer with them. I think their education is as big as people who are having a problem, because we need to be approachable and we need to be able to put them in the right direction if we're going to be in the environment, in this case in football, but in life.
I think one of my most hated phrases is when you hear people say, "Oh, just man up, just man up." What does that even mean? Like, just the most ridiculous.
It's one of them. I don't want to be flipping about the subject, but that's the equivalent of they wanted it more than us.
Yes.
You know, it's that.
Yeah.
What do you mean, mate? You know, you know. So yes, no, I get where you are with it.
It's but yeah, I mean, you know, as I say, the non-league community played a massive part in last year's success and spreading the inside out message and getting it on social media. And again, the charity is North East based, but the support we had from around the country has been absolutely phenomenal. And this year, we're just hoping to go one step further and increase awareness and increase on last year's reach of 9.5 million people, which I don't mind telling you was about 3 times more than what we had the year before. So I don't think we'll quite hit 3 times more this year and end up with 27 million, but I'd be happy to increase and get in sort of over 10 million would be great. And again, if any non-league clubs are out there and want to take part, it's just so simple to do. So it'll take 2 seconds at your game on Saturday. Just get a player or manager with a shirt inside out. Get a photo taken, stick it on your social media. You can tag in the foundation. It's just at if you care share, and use the hashtags inside out and ask me why. And you know, the foundation will be sharing stuff as much as possible on Saturday, and to just get behind the campaign, because it's very important, and you know, it could help save a life.
Well, great to talk to you as ever, Mark, especially with such a great cause. I can't let you go without asking you about the situation at Gateshead, because obviously when we last had you on the end of the phone last season, it really looked like the club was heading into oblivion. But again, there's always hope, and that didn't happen. But where are the club at right now? They're playing, which was a great thing. But what does the future hold?
So I'll tell you, one key figure spoke to me during that period and said that the club was 72 hours from going out of business. And that wasn't just thrown out there flippantly. That was a genuine, it was 72 hours from having no Gateshead Football Club. And let's not forget, prior to their points deduction at the end of last season for the punishment for financial irregularities, Gateshead were the North East top ranking non-league club. It was only those 9-point deduction that took them below Hartlepool United. So the situation in the summer was that the a supporter-led consortium led by Neil Pinkerton, Trevor Clark, and the Gateshead Soul Supporters Group took control of the club, basically bought it from the previous owner. Who the previous owner was is open to personal opinion, but they did have... Dr. Ranjan Varghese, who was a Hong Kong-based businessman. And I can say it now, for me, I don't know why a Hong Kong-based businessman would buy Gateshead Football Club. People will have their own opinions. I'll not say mine, because they could end up with me being in court. Then there was Joseph Keller, who was well-known in football scenes. He's tried to buy into Morecambe, caused issues there. Tried to buy into Portsmouth, caused issues there. There's a situation surrounding Belper Town where he tried to get involved there, and that didn't happen, thankfully, for Belper. However, he did get into Gateshead as a financial advisor for the owner, and that's kind of where the issue started. But now they are a supporter-owned club. They're run by the, as I say, a supporter-led consortium. They have started the season in solid, if not, I wouldn't go so far to say spectacular form. Yeah. They've lost one of their first... 8 games, I think it is now. They've drawn a lot of them. They've won 3 games, but they look solid. Mike Williamson, the former Newcastle player, is now manager, player manager. He has Ian Watson, who was assistant manager last season, still in that position. They've brought in a lot of new players, but they've got a lovely little mix of experience and youth. They've got Michael Nelson, who, of course, was a stalwart at Hartlepool United, went on to play in Scotland as a big, tough centre-back. He's a player coach. And things are progressing. The crowds have gone up, and there's a nice feel around the club now. And, you know, let's be honest, they can't run yet. They've still got to walk and crawl and try and get themselves off their feet. But they are getting there, and there's a lot of community work going in. And the future looks bright. They just need, and if anyone from Gateshead is listening, and I mean the wider community, not necessarily just the football club, you need to get behind this club because it's a very, very special club.
Yeah.
And the fact it is supporter owned is very, very unique in North East football. I think there's only Darlington that is supporter owned. It's great to see. It's great to see I'll be honest, I think when I spoke to you at the end of last season, I thought the club was gone. To go that close was worrying, but they are back now and they've had a good start of the season. But being in existence, I think, is a success already. So we'll see what happens on the pitch. But it's been a good start, and that's really positive.
Positive news all round there, Mark. Just remind people how they can get involved with the If You Care Share campaign again.
Yeah, so on Saturday or Tuesday, if you have a game Tuesday night, if you want to take part then, just get a member of the club to wear an item of clothing inside out. Take a photo, put it on your Instagram, your Facebook accounts or your Twitter accounts. Use the hashtags inside out and ask me why and tag in the foundation. It's at If You Care Share on Instagram and on Twitter. We'll share it as much as we can. And just thanks in advance for everyone's support. It'd be great to see the non-league community pushing it once again.
Well, thank you once again, Mark Ruthers, and we'll speak to you very soon.
Thank you.
Cheers, mate.
So just time to head on over to the non-league paper towers and welcome back to the non-league show, editor-at-large of the non-league paper, Mr. Matt Bagcock. Welcome back, Matt.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's always a pleasure. It's always a pleasure. Now, it's been a quiet week, but we do have the international tournament this weekend in Scotland, known as the Tunnocks Caramel Wafer Challenge Cup. An interesting tie. It sees a former Scotland international Barry Ferguson up against former England international Tim Flowers as Kelty Hearts play host to Solihull Moors. This is the third round. Do we know how serious Solihull are taking this competition?
Well, I speak to the couple of the lads at Solihull the other night. I went to Notts County and saw them there, and sort of the media lads. They were looking forward to the trip up there. I think it's one of those. I think we sort of sat in, didn't we, last year in Bournemouth. I mean, you know, it's they'll probably go out there, and I'm sure they'll try and do their best to win. I think they'll probably fancy themselves up there. My Scottish football knowledge isn't the best, but I think they're sort of. I don't think it's sort of a competition that'd be sort of anywhere near anyone's priority, really. You know, for them or Wrexham, I think we know that what they're trying to do, and that's to get in those playoffs at least this season. And both, I mean, it's sort of steady. Solihull Moors have had a sort of steady start, but yeah, it's a good opportunity, I guess, to get away from the league for a little bit, have a little break, freshen up, and come back again.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because Wrexham, I think, are home to Ayr, and so it'll be a good gauge as to how. Supporters are taking how seriously the supporters are taking it as well to see how many turn up at Wrexham on Saturday.
Yeah, see, I mean, obviously Wrexham is such a well-supported club. I'm sure that people might go down sort of out of a bit of intrigue more than anything. Then it's sort of just a strange fixture, and it's quite an interesting one. It's one of those maybe say, oh, I was there. You know, same for Solihull Moor fans to think, oh, maybe I'll go up and watch a rare unique game. But I think if both sort of carried on going through the rounds, and maybe they'd think, oh, it's going to become a bit more of a problem at the moment. It's kind of a bit of a novelty factor, isn't it?
It is, and obviously I've mentioned the Tunnocks Caramel Wafer Challenge Cup. We're always open to sponsorship on the non-league football show. I haven't seen a cardboard box arrive from of Tunnocks. Have you received one at the non-league paper towers yet?
No, but if there is one coming out, I know there's some very hungry lads in the office who will snaffle them up, I'm sure. But it would be nice. We're also open to all sorts of other things as well, TVs and things like that. So send them down.
We're not on the BBC anymore. We can say what we like. Obviously, FA Cup this weekend, and we all have a bit of cup action. But some of those replays only Wednesday evening. Logistically, it must be a headache for you guys trying to plan a play because you don't know where you're only just aware of where clubs are going to be playing on Saturday.
Yeah, it is. I've sort of been staring at the screen this morning a little bit, sort of thinking, what are we doing here? And we obviously have a lot to sort of liaise with and sort of work out. And it's not tricky. It's time of season. It is a really funny one for the Poke. It's sort of, you don't really get into that routine of all the league action every week, and then a bit of FA Cup. It's sort of here, there, and everyone. Sort of the bars came in last week as well, didn't it? So it's been it's sort of a bit of a logistical headache, but hopefully we'll get there. But there's lots of exciting games, and you sort of look through the list of the amount of games there are, and you sort of realise what big competition this is. But this is it's obviously where all the Step 3 clubs come in, and who knows what might happen for these guys in the coming weeks and months.
Yeah, and you're looking at those Step 3 clubs. Yeah, we might get Step 4, Step 5, maybe going further, but it's normally a Step 3 club that moves on and does well into the first round, second round. So this is the start of someone's big, you know, FA Cup dream, and you know, not only the wealth of riches that come with that, with prize money and maybe TV money, but it's also the exposure and the chance to widen the appeal of your club to both the local community and the wider world. I know we've got Hayes and Yedding fans that became Yedding fans when Yedding played Newcastle in the FA Cup, which was, what, 14 years ago?
Yeah, exactly. And it's that sort of lasting impact that a cup run can have. It seems to even more so than a sort of a good league season. That obviously brings in fans, but a cup run really sort of captures the imagination, doesn't it? And it can really sort of be a springboard for clubs if they sort of use that right and build on it and sort of, you know, the money sort of spent wisely and then just the general interest is kind of built on it. It can be a really, really big thing for clubs. You know, you look at, it's someone we always talk about, you look at Lincoln City and a couple of years ago and how that cup run, what that did for not only the club itself with the finance and being able to pay off their debt and then build a training ground after that, but also that everything that came with it, with the city sort of falling in love with their club again, was, you know, the FA Cup run was a huge part of that. And it was sort of the first round, feels a very, very long way away at the moment, but every year we see clubs get through, and it's the money's great, but it's also that sort of chance to have your sort of moment and have the you know, all the attention turned on you on that sort of first round day.
Yeah, and one club where they will be looking forward to the FA Cup this weekend had a managerial change, an interesting move down at Wimborne Town in the Southern League South this week. Manager Matty Holmes has moved to a new role as a community and academy director of football, which is a role apparently he'd been geared up to move to for quite a while. But it just seems strange timing. I think he notched his first league win with them this season at the weekend. But they've got an FA Cup trip to Truro on Saturday, so they're having to put caretakers in place, which just seems... nothing ever surprises me in football nowadays. But it just seems a strange timing there.
Yeah, I mean, I saw you sort of in the sort of few days before an FA Cup game. I think we saw that, it was with Avely the other week, wasn't it, when the manager left there and sort of, you know, sort of saying, well, it's not great timing a few days before an FA Cup because of how important that is. And I think every year you sort of see it, don't you? You know, clubs make their managerial changes after the FA Cup runs if they haven't sort of gone well. That's often when managers seem to leave clubs. But I guess, you know, Wimborne, they've obviously, like you say, they've known that this is where they're going to be going. Obviously, Matty Holmes done a really good job there. He got promoted, didn't he, in his second season. So, you know, it's sort of looking at the club as a whole and just not that first team. And I think that's the way lots of non-league clubs are really having to think now and trying to think. And it's sort of, his coaching team, I think, are going to be taking charge at the weekend. And I guess it's not going to be much change. And when the players go out there, you know, they're still going to be trying to do the same things that they've been working on throughout the season anyway. But
Yeah, and
it'll be interesting to see how they go. You never know; might be the catalyst.
It was interesting that the statement was coming out of the club, though. I think they're looking for a successor to Matty that will carry on the same footballing ethos, which makes sense if he's going to be in charge of the academy. Then you want the same sort of style of football coming through. But you always wonder whether then that could limit who they can bring in as a manager, unless they've got somebody in mind. You know, it could be this coaching pairing, or maybe this will give them the opportunity to show their worth, and that maybe give them the opportunity to take the manager's job for full time. But it is again how non-league clubs are having to think differently from the old school way.
Yeah, I think it is it's changed, isn't it? The landscape, you know, even just in the last few years, really, where clubs are, you know, trying to build everything, not just the first team, but everything around their club, and, you know, improving facilities and having lots more youth set up teams and girls teams and women's teams. And it's really trying to build a whole sort of community type club is what a lot want to do, to really sort of tap into, you know, make the most of the people they've got around them, rather than, you know, a few hundred people turning up every other Saturday sort of thing, and the odd Tuesday. You want a club to be sort of a real sort of thriving sort of part of the community. And I guess these are the ways of doing it and getting you know, people around your club more often and then ultimately through the turnstiles on a Saturday to watch the first team because they're part of it the rest of the week sort of thing.
Mm. And talking of changes and the way things have been doing, there've been other managerial changes in the England setup with some new appointments with non-league grounding, part of the Football Association's programme to boost the numbers of black, Asian and ethnic minority coaches. I see Guiseley's Marcus Bignot has been named assistant manager to Ian Foster with the under-18s, and former Leighton Orient caretaker and old friend of the show, Omar Reza, is helping out Justin Cochran with the under-16s there.
Yeah, it's great. I think Kevin Betts is involved with the under-16s as well, isn't he? Former Woking. But, you know, it's great. It's great that, you know, they've been given these opportunities, but also I think at the same time, though, so these are really good coaches. Marcus Bignot's record speaks for itself and what he's sort of done with in his management career and when he was at Solihull, and he took over a lot of the way the club was run, really, and sort of, you know, really helped them get back on a stable footing. But it is, you know, it is an important area, and I think something, you know, needs to be done, because there's clearly an issue there, and in fact, the FA are leading the way on it. Seems right to me, and it'd be a great opportunity for them. And, you know, knowing Marcus and speaking to him, he's always one that sort of come across as one who wants to improve players around him, but also himself. And I'm sure this will be really really good for him, but also good for players, because he's had a habit in the past of finding players and nurturing them and moving them on. Obviously, Omar Bogle was with him at Solihull. Now he's sort of playing in the Championship, isn't he? So it'd be really sort of interesting for him, and obviously alongside Guiseley, who are going well at the moment as well.
Yeah, and it's got to be good for non-league as well, because he's going to be learning different methods or at least touching and learning new ways and seeing how other things are done. Yeah, maybe with slightly bigger budgets, of course, but that's got to help him bringing that back into non-league. And then we also see in wider news, Tyrone Mings, a former Yate Town and Chippenham Town defender, called up into the senior squad for England. So the non-league is having an impact on the whole game.
Yeah, definitely. This is a great story about Tyrone Mings. You know, the story was great anyway, even the fact that he, you know, was playing Chippenham and Yate not all that long ago, and then went on and played in the Premier League and got big moves, obviously, after Ipswich picked him up initially for, I think it was about 10 grand, wasn't it? So, you know, now to be in the England squad really just shows. I think I saw an interview of him this morning where he sort of said, you know, when he was a mortgage advisor and playing for Chippenham, you know, playing for England wasn't a goal. It wasn't even a thought. But it does sort of show that, first of all, there's sort of talented players down here who may be falling out of Premier League clubs or academy system and sort of need that sort of time to sort of play and then go up again. And, you know, with that sort of dedication and hard work, what can be achieved, and guess there'll be a lot of lads who won't be sitting there now thinking, oh, God, I can play for England in a few years. But they can at least say, well, you know, this is actually, if I dedicate myself to what I'm doing and work hard, live right, I can do it. It's not, you know, non-league football is not that, you know, not that sort of place where people aren't looking and hoping to find gems. And it's just people playing part-time just for a laugh and having 10 pints the night before sort of thing. This is, you know, it's serious sort of level of football. And there are talented players down here. And Tyrone Mings is going to be a really good ambassador for non-league football because he's been quite sort of vocal on Twitter about, you know, a few weeks ago about, look where I was only a few years ago and now I'm in the Premier League and others. He wants to inspire others. And he's sort of shown that throughout his time when he's been at Ipswich and Bournemouth and now Aston Villa. So he's going to be a really, really good ambassador for non-league football.
And hopefully there'll be many more ambassadors to come. Probably someone that you're about to interview in the next couple of days ahead for the weekend's paper. What else can we expect in this weekend's paper then, Matt, as well as lots of FA Cup coverage?
Yep, lots of FA Cup coverage. We've also got Adam Virgo having a look at the opening month of the National League season, running his sort of expert eye over what's been a really busy month. Sort of, it seems incredible, really, that the National League have already played 9 games and we're only at the very beginning of September. So a lot of football's been played. I spoke to Neil Ardy the other night when I was up at Notts County, so sort of got his thoughts on a start. It's quite interesting sort of going there and seeing how the club and the fans are. There's sort of a few boos at the final whistle and you can sort of understand that they're frustrated and want to get out quickly, but it wasn't all that long ago that their club was was really sort of in jeopardy, and it shows that football moves on pretty quickly sometimes, isn't it? So hopefully having a piece with Woken boss Alan Dowson after their amazing start. Absolutely flying Woken at the moment. And then we've also got a feature with a Basingstoke Town player, Reece Rusher, who's also a professional FIFA player. So how about that? If his football career doesn't go how he wants it, he'll have a career in gaming.
Well, maybe that was the wrong turn that we both took there, Matt. We chose the pen rather than the joystick.
Yes, that was probably one of many errors, but there's another time to talk about that.
Well, Matt, thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. We look forward to reading all about it in the paper at the weekend.
Thanks, Tim.
Well, that's it for this week. A big thank you for Dave for being with me.
No problem. I didn't want to say that Church is in the FA Cup as well this week. I think it's as far as they've been for a while. Maybe playing Sheppey off the top of my head.
Sheppey Town?
Yeah. So, I want to wish them all the best.
You mean you didn't get to Wembley in the FA Cup?
No. To be fair, my record last year in the FA Cup, I'd like to leave there, you know. But so, good luck to the boys.
Well, don't forget you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. Dave Anderson at DaveAnderson78, Caroline Barker at Caroline Barker, and myself at Tim Fuel. Plus, of course, you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on iTunes, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, Smart Speakers, and all your good podcast aggregation sites. Thank you and goodbye.
J-I-B-B-A-J-A-B-B-A.